It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, we'll hear another one of the conversations that was recorded in the StoryCorps recording booth in Charleston.
How many times did you get in trouble?
How often?
No. Did your mom write that question?
Yes.
That's coming up in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The first West Virginia Supreme Court justice to go on trial in an impeachment scandal says she didn't engage in conduct that justifies her removal from office. Dave Mistich has more.
Proceedings kicked off in the state Senate Monday in the trial of Justice Beth Walker. The House of Delegates impeached Walker and three other justices on a charge of failing to hold one another accountable and failing to provide administrative oversight. It's the only impeachment count Walker faces. The House chose not to impeach her for spending $131,000 on office renovations, far less than what some other justices spent. Walker's attorney, Mike Hissom, gave his opening remarks, saying Walker made mistakes and has owned up to them, including reimbursing the state for taxpayer-funded lunches for the justices. Monday's testimony came from Walker, Justin Robinson of the Legislative Auditor's Post-Audit Division, Court Finance Director Sue Racer Troy, and State Auditor J.B. McCuskey. Proceedings resumed Tuesday, with one additional witness yet to be heard. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
New data show West Virginia and Kentucky have some of the nation's worst rates of student loan defaults. Economists say budget cuts to education and poor job prospects are to blame. Sydney Bowles reports.
According to the Department of Education, students in West Virginia have the highest student loan default rate in the nation. Sean O'Leary, a policy analyst at the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy, a left-leaning research organization, says the increasing cost of higher education is to blame.
We're a low-income state, so, you know, the people in our state who do want to further their education and go on, they're borrowing a lot of money, and they're borrowing a lot more money than they used to.
O'Leary says higher ed has become a bigger part of West Virginia's discretionary budget as lawmakers cut taxes over the past decade.
So when we, you know, when we have budget shortfalls and when we need to, you know, cut the budget, higher education is usually the first part of that budget that goes under the budget line.
Ohio ranked near the middle among states, but Kentucky was fourth worst on the list of default rates. Ashley Spaulding, a policy analyst at the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, says that just like in West Virginia, the numbers highlight the challenges Kentuckians face in paying back their loans.
And so this default rate really highlights the college affordability challenges that we really do have in Kentucky. It's difficult to pay back student loans when you see the cost of college rising, but wages aren't.
Spaulding points out that students entering loan repayment were finding a job market with few promising opportunities, especially in rural parts of the state. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles in Whitesburg, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Jake Lynch is the community engagement editor for the online publication 100 Days in Appalachia. His job is to try to find creative, brave, weird new ways to bring community into the news gathering process. To that end, he's developed a new youth media project that seeks to engage with educators and high school seniors throughout the region. He spoke with Glennis Board about the project and how it started with a pilot program in a few Appalachian schools.
We ended up partnering with three schools in West Virginia, one in North Carolina and one in Kentucky, to do, you know, social and political polling of high school kids via text message. We had two goals. One was, is this going to work? You know, will kids even respond to us via text message? Are they interested in using that platform to have conversations? And we found out that they were. We had great response rate. And then secondly, we were just interested in, you know, how correct are our assumptions about how young people feel. And we found that, you know, these kids are not easily pigeonholed in terms of how they feel about issues. There was a, you know, a national narrative at that time early this year, you know, being driven by what was happening down in Florida with the Parkland kids, you know, that younger students were overwhelmingly left-leaning and they were, you know, millennials are this liberal voting bloc idea. And so, but people hadn't really asked kids in Appalachia if that applied to them too. And so we did, you know, and we found that it was a lot more of a complicated answer. This block of young Appalachians, I think, is a fascinating political challenge for the existing parties, in that I don't think they're particularly interested in towing the party line. You know, they have ideas on the left and the right. So after that pilot project, you know, the folks at 100 Days in Appalachia were really interested in diving deeper and getting a bigger sample size of kids across West Virginia. And so what we're doing now is what we think is the first ever statewide survey of the political and social ideas of high school seniors. We're recruiting teachers. We've got about 30 schools in West Virginia involved, and we're hoping to get more.
Great. And so you have been collecting audio in addition to survey material. Is that correct?
I haven't seen any of that yet, but I believe Ashton and maybe some of the other folks at 100 Days have been involved in that, yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to listen to just a little bit of the audio that has been collected right now. Let's just listen in for just a second to some of the audio that has been collected so far.
Hi, I'm Jocelyn Prado, and I'm currently a senior at 100 High School. What differences do I see between my generation and my parents' generation? I think there has been a lot of change. My parents used to talk about how they used to go into the woods and they used to just play with just sticks and dirt, and they would sit there for hours and hours at a time. I, right now in 2018, come home and I'm on my phone. Hundreds and thousands of kids follow that same routine, and I think that needs to change. I think that's really going to affect us.
So, Jake, why do you think it's important to that they share their opinions in this way?
I think for too long, a lot of news agencies, newsrooms, newspapers feel like, you know, oh, hey, we have a Facebook page, so we've like ticked the millennium box, but it's just not going to cut it anymore. I think we need to be really radical with how else we deliver content to young people. But firstly, what we want to do is help young people see themselves in the news. And the way we want to do that is to ask them some of the critical issues that define and drive their country, to ask their opinions on the hard issues. We think that's a really important first step to helping young people feel like the news relates to them and matters to them. I think that's how we're going to start to make some of these young people be consumers of news as well.
And we need them to be consumers of news because their participation is important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Broadly speaking, we're starting to hear from teachers are telling us this, and students are telling us this, that because of the toxic, belligerent sort of political environment at the moment, these kids don't really feel safe having conversations about issues like immigration and about abortion and gun control and the environment. They don't want to talk about them anymore because whether it's on social media or in the classrooms, it often ends up being very abusive and just not a pleasant experience for these kids. So that's really dangerous for democracy. You know, if we have a generation of young Americans growing up feeling like they'd just rather not talk about things, you know, I'm sure we can all see where that goes, and it's certainly not healthy. And so with this polling project, you know, one of the things we want to do is create a safe space for kids to be able to talk, to be able to express their opinions, and to do so completely away from a partisan frame. So none of the questions we ask are about whether they feel like they are a Democrat or Republican. We don't care who they're going to vote for. We don't ask them if they are left or right leaning. We just give them a bit more freedom to describe how they feel about, you know, these big social and political issues that are so important to America at the moment. That is certainly step one into then making these kids feel like they have a role in elections and that their vote matters and that they're engaged and informed about the issues, yeah.
That was Jake Lynch from 100 Days in Appalachia speaking with Glennis Ford. So far, more than 800 seniors have participated in the polling project. Stay tuned to West Virginia Public Broadcasting, where we will bring you those results and voices of more students from across the state. This morning, we'll hear from the Laird family, who visited the StoryCorps recording booth in Charleston, West Virginia recently. Today, West Virginia Public Broadcasting is teaming up with StoryCorps and the Clay Center to host a special live event to share some of those stories, including this one with 9-year-old Liam and his 6-year-old brother Conrad, who asked their dad, Will, about his childhood.
How many times did you get in trouble?
How often?
No. Did your mom write that question?
Yes.
I was a pretty good kid for the most part. I'd get into a lot of trouble, but I don't have a malicious bone in my body, so the trouble that I would get into was just like kind of fun things, you know, playing little pranks on my teachers or my friends. And I got in so much trouble in high school that we had this thing when you got in trouble, you had to go and spend time with the dean at boarding school. He'd wake you up in your room at 8 a.m. Well, we were supposed to get up, but I'm not very good at getting up in the morning, as you know. So sometimes the dean would come and wake me up, and we would have to go and walk in circles around the campus with him for 2 hours on Saturday morning. And that was called guard. It was known as the guard squad. You'd go walk with all the other troublemakers. And I had guard pretty much every Saturday of my entire high school career. They would measure guard in hours. You would have so many hours of guard that you would have to work off. And they would deliver your how much guard you had on note cards to you at lunch on Fridays. And the note cards would all be attached to each other, and I could hold mine out and it would just unfold and hit the floor. It was so long. There were times when I had a couple hundred hours of guard. But like I said, you know, it was kind of fun. I got to be pretty close with the dean. We got to be really good friends, and he was a pretty neat guy. He was actually, at one time, he was the president of the National Geographic Explorers Club. He was an archaeologist. He'd been to the Arctic Circle several times.
Whoa.
He'd been to the Antarctic and had done all sorts of neat things. And had I not always gotten in trouble, I wouldn't have gotten to spend so much time with him.
Why did you think of our names?
Why did we think of your names?
I obviously know Conrad's and I know mine.
Well, Liam, do you want to tell us?
You were going to name me after 5 generations of William.
Yeah, but did you know that I didn't want to?
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
What did you want to name me?
I don't know, but I thought that it was maybe time to cut it off after. Have you ever met another 6th?
No.
Yeah, that's kind of a lot, and I sort of thought it was time to cut it off. But Willie, your grandpa, pulled me aside and said, "Let me tell you something. If that child is born a boy, and you name it Bob or Tom or anything other than William R. Laird, I've never laid a hand on you, but I will beat you." And then your mom, we decided that we would call you Liam, short for William. And I was okay with that. I liked that. Conrad, your name is
after Nana.
No, it's after your Grammy. Her last name before she got married was Conrad. And your middle name, McNeil, is the same as your Uncle Paul's and lots Nana. Of people in our family. That's an old family name of ours too. So both your names are very
special.
Kind of special historic family names to my side and your mom's side of the family. Thanks for coming and doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
I love you.
I love you guys so much. You
you
make me so proud. And seriously, being a dad is it's my favorite thing in the world.
Please don't cry before this ends. Please.
I wouldn't trade it for anything. I might.
No, please don't. Please don't. Please don't.
All right. I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was brothers Liam and Conrad Laird speaking with their dad, Will Laird. Their conversation was produced by Shayla Klein and was recorded by the Mobile StoryCorps booth, which is in Charleston through October 7th. You can hear this conversation and more this evening at 5:30 at the Walker Theater at the Clay Center in downtown Charleston. More information is on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.